Gather around your speakers, hoop heads. It's NBA story time. Jamel Johnson here to spin you tales of NBA shenanigans you didn't know you needed to know. Like that time when a little startup league tried anything to be relevant, or when Ricky Davis earned himself a dumb nickname. I also love you, Ricky Davis. Catch a new tale on NBA Storytime every week, then listen to the postgame where I break it down with comedians, ballers, and what have you. Find NBA Storytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Guys, what's up? I want to take a quick second to let you guys know that our podcast is supported by Anchor. That's right. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. I'm doing this ad from my phone as we speak. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. Evidently, I can't talk. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Now back to the show.
Wash up, walk-ons fans. We're back for another episode. And, man, I just love recording these podcasts. I'm so grateful that you guys give us this platform, that you guys continue to listen. This is another episode with a former teammate, Jordan Canzeri. And after playing with these guys for so many years, even talking to them now, you still learn things about them. And it was so fun to catch up. Here's the episode. Let's have a day. Let's go.
Welcome back, Washed Up Walk-Ons fans. Episode 98 of the podcast, and we've got another teammate joining us this week, this episode. And this guy, I think the way I want to intro him is that he's a guy who holds many records. I think he has to be the record at Iowa for the smallest human to ever carry it over 40 times in a game. He is probably the only teammate I've ever wanted to beat up like the most. The only guy I think who's ever been stuffed in a trash can in the locker room. Don't interrupt my intro. It's my time. But in all seriousness, man, he was a hell of a player, a hell of a human being. We had a ton of great times. Shared some insane memories in the running back room, and looking forward to getting into just hashing it out, talking a little shit. So welcome, Jordan Canzeri, to the podcast.
Happy to be here. And I mean, I didn't even know that you wanted to beat me up that bad, but I'm glad that the feeling was.
Listen, Canzeri, it was either you or Akram. I'm not sure who tried to induce me to fight them more. It probably Akram. You're probably second on that list. Cause he really would poke the bear a lot and try and invoke me. But, no, I didn't.
Oh, yeah.
You want to fight you? You're just a little shit talker, you know?
Ag wasn't even bad, but he was the one running back out of all of us that I almost did get in a fight with. That one time when I came back from the ankle injury, and we were like pushing, it was right after he blew up and Northwestern, and we were like we're literally shoving each other in and out of the huddle.
Yeah.
Gave it practice.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, that was pretty insane. There were a couple of fun times involving Ack and a little misdemeanor incidents
He's fun.
Don't feel bad, Jordan, because, you know, as we do these, you know, 98, we're slowly closing in on 100. It seems like every intro, Drake finds some way to relate back to wanting to fight whoever is on our podcast.
No, not every time.
Every single time.
Not every time.
I'm not surprised because he's the only person I've ever met in my life who's had a dream of beating the shit out of his mother.
Yep.
Twice.
When you told me that, I was crying.
He did. He
had, like, no, I love her. I just put her through a wall.
Yeah.
Actually happened, dude. This actually happened. There, like, a dream in my sleep. I was laying down in my bed. And I woke up from a dream in which my mom and I were in an altercation. She was yelling at me. She was fucking screaming at me, right? Which is unusual. So you can, like, take this as it is. But she was just, like, losing her mind on me in my dream. And then she just starts swinging. And I grabbed my mom and I chucked her. And she just went right through the wall. That happened in a dream. And... you know, I love you, Mom. I'm sorry. It didn't actually happen.
That's wild.
Yeah, I was crying when you told me that. But I'll say it still wasn't as bad as what you said when Mila Kunis was at the facility. Well, in the parking lot.
Listen, we don't gotta go that far.
What'd you say, Drake?
Listen, it probably got a little
graphic.
A little graphic because Mila Kunis is she's on my list of like top three hottest women to ever live probably. Mm-hmm. And you know, the way that I may or may not have spoken in the locker room at 21 years old, you know,
dude,
it probably could have gotten a little
Mila Kunis though. Like when me and Smitty saw her in the parking lot, cause we first saw Ashton with his hat down. We're like, yo, who is that? Then we look at the Escalade and she's just waving, and bro, I swore that month too, like I was literally telling somebody, I was like, yo, people who go nuts over celebrities are crazy, like that's just stupid. But as soon as I saw her, bro, I was ready to chase the car. Like,
yep.
And that was the year that they were planning on the concert in Kinnick, right? And it was like,
yeah,
during camp when Ashton and Mila were there, right?
It was like, well, that when they showed up that day when I saw them, it was after the Big Ten championship. But yeah, they were planning for the next year during the summer when they had the concert.
Yep. Yeah, that concert.
Because I remember I got mad at Dallas because when I was talking to them in the parking lot, Dallas Clark like made a funny, he just made like a little joke. He's like, hey, I heard that you tweeted if you didn't get hurt in the Big Ten championship that we would have won. And I was like, no, we can't even tweet. Like, I wouldn't say that, da, da, da. And he's like, oh, I'm just fucking with you. And he just starts laughing. And I'm like, how dare you make Ashton laugh at me? Like, I was so hurt.
Damn, that's trash.
He was cool, though.
That was a cool day. I remember when Ashton was walking out of the building and, like, leaving. And I was just like, Ashton Kutcher's, like, in the facility. Like, what's going on?
Ashton Kutcher is one of the guys who's been famous for so long that he almost seems like surreal.
That he's like, it was wild to see him. He almost got in the car. He turned back and came and was like dapping people up. Like, yo, what's up? I think we were like going out to practice or something.
He's a cool dude.
Anyway, back to the intro. Back to you, Jordan. A guy that got a ton of playing time at Iowa, and we'll go through the whole story. A guy that Hawkeye Nation knows plenty about. I want to go back to the intro where Drake said that you're the smallest guy to ever carry it more than 40 times. The size doesn't even factor into it. You have the record for carries in a game at 43. Did you know that?
Yeah. The one thing that, like, I remember they told me that at the end. But the one thing that I was like, wait, what, was when even Farron said he was surprised. He's like, yeah, I didn't even know I had you run the ball 11 times in a row. I was like, yeah, I couldn't even, like, it didn't even feel like that. Every time he, like, got up and everyone was screaming and crap, like, what, we killed, like, 7 minutes off the clock, too. So,
yeah,
it was definitely a crazy drive.
So the one thing I left out of the intro, I totally meant to put in, and the only teammate who I've ever given a neck massage to in the middle of a game.
Wow.
Because it was in the middle of that game where he carried it 43 times. We were going from the third quarter to the fourth, switching over the fields for the TV timeout. And during the TV timeout, I was rubbing his neck because I was like, dude, you're winning us the game. So let's just keep doing what you're doing, bud.
That was the only reason I could do that 11 in a row. My neck was feeling good.
What a good guy, Drake. What a good guy. Yep. What is it like, Kanzeri? I was a running back in 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th grade. And I remember a 13-play drive freshman year in high school when I carried it all 13 plays, and I wanted to die. I can't imagine what that would be like in a Division I football game. What was that like?
I mean, like I said, it was kind of surreal where I didn't even feel like I was tired until probably like the last couple, because every time I got up, everyone's screaming, going nuts, and everything was just going our way. But the next day definitely felt like I got hit by a car. That was a lot.
You damn near made the 25 play minimum shakeout in one series.
Oh yeah, and I still had to run the same as everybody else.
Trash.
Doyle did not care.
Trash. 43 carries in that game. I think it was 246 yards. I looked it up before the podcast, so we had something to talk about, and then it came up. So, quite a game. That was Illinois 2015. And that was a decent year. We will get there. But first, I want to come back all the way to kind of what we do here is we tell the whole story. And, Kanz, you're from Troy, New York. And I want to know how the Hawkeyes got on your radar and how you made your way to Iowa City and kind of the story of that.
So Iowa never really hit my radar. It was funny because where I am in upstate New York, like it's my high school, we've only had one other guy for football go to like a big school. He went to Michigan State, but he never played because he kept getting knee injuries, big lineman. And so in my area, like that's not a thing. We got guys for baseball, lacrosse, and basketball, but not so much football. So going into our state championship run, there was a coach down in New Jersey who never even met me before. And he like watched our quarterfinal game and he was like, who is that kid? Like, he's really good. How many offers does he have? And people were like, oh, he only has like D1, AA's and D2's because nobody even recruits in our area. Iowa doesn't even recruit in our area. But he just did it on his own. He made a highlight film for me, which is sending it out.
Wow.
And then luckily it ended up on Coach O'Keefe's desk. He said he was about to not even watch it too, but they watched it. He brought it into the meeting room, showed them all, and they called me over the phone and offered me over the phone.
That's wild.
Just about didn't watch it, man. Coach O'Keefe was just about didn't watch it away from us not having this kind of.
Exactly. And the funny thing was too, I said thank you to Coach Ferentz so much because he called me when I was with my girlfriend. And I was verbally committed to Villanova. And so he calls me and he's like, hi, how are you doing? My name's Kirk Ferentz. I'm the head coach of Iowa. Like none of it clicked to me, Big Ten. Like,
right.
She's like, okay, yeah. And he's like, so we would love to offer you a scholarship and have you come out and do a visit and everything. And I was just like, no, I'm good. He's like, wait, what? I was like, no, I'm verbally committed to Villanova. I'm good. But thank you, though. I really appreciate it. He's like, oh, all right. Well, you sure? I was like, yeah, no, yeah. But thank you so much. Really appreciate it. And he's like, oh, all right. Well, you have a good one.
Dude.
And calls my dad. 5 minutes later, my dad calls me back. Like, are you fucking out of your mind? Like, tells me who he was. And I was like, oh, my gosh. So I called him back. And I was like, I'm so sorry. Like, yes, I'd love to come.
That is wild.
Yeah, so it was funny.
You legitimately had no idea what the state of Iowa even was, dude. You're like, there's a state called Iowa?
Yeah. All of my friends were like, bro, you're going to Iowa? You're going to be a farmer? And the one thing, too, every time I came back, all my friends would be like, yo, why are you talking so slow now? I was like, what do you mean? But that was the first thing I heard when I came to Iowa. People were like, you talk way too fast. I was like, it's the East Coast. This is what we do.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's funny story.
That is, holy shit. I mean, so very similar. It almost seems like everybody has this thing in their story of like it almost didn't happen, and the fact that some coach just put together a tape for you and sent it to, and it somehow landed on Kenny O'Keefe's desk, and then he almost didn't watch it. He was just like, "Eh, I'm good," but then he decided to throw it in. That, I mean, that's just wild. And then you talking about the story of you just telling coach, "No, I'm good," is hilarious. It reminds me of about 2 months or a month and a half ago, we did the episode with the Paulson twins, and they, when they got offered, had a similar kind of thing. They were so small town Iowa that they didn't know what being offered meant, or like get it. Like, they didn't even know how to commit.
They left the offer on the table for a long time.
And
their coach went to him and he was like, "Hey man, you guys should really think about this."
Like, you guys planning a sign or it's like, wait, good.
So, man, that's wild. So, you came into Iowa in 2011 and played right away. You got playing time right away as a freshman. Talk about kind of that transition from high school football out east to Big Ten football.
Oh, I mean, the first thing I remember in summer camp, that everything just seemed so much faster. And I was just like, geez, like, this is crazy. But, like, I was, you know, I was excited. And I was the one annoying freshman that I was talking to, like, some of the older guys. And you know how we slowly progress, like, the conditioning level we do in the summer. I was like, when can we run? I was like, when am I able to do stuff? And they're like, you don't know what you're asking for. I'm like, no, I want to hurry up and run. And I remember the first day we ran all together with them. I might have been Jordan Cotton. I'm not 100% sure, but like somebody passed out, had to get taken off by an ambulance because it was so hot. And I was like, whoa. Hey. I was like, so this is what we're dealing with.
All right. That's
but no, it was so fun, exciting. And I just got to play right away, even though, as Drake said, I was small. I think I came into Iowa at 172.
Wow.
Like,
wow. So were on those
shake list.
You were on those black Gatorade can shakes for sure.
No, before you guys even wait. No. Yeah, I don't think you guys ever had it at the old complex.
Yeah,
we used to have to do
applesauce,
white powder.
Yeah. Oh, come on,
we were there
for years, man. We did that for 2 years.
Oh yeah,
This is the OG podcast.
So. After the bowl game, after that Tennessee bowl game, was when we switched over to the new complex, and we were there we had been there for like 16 months at that point. So we had 16 months in the old complex making the applesauce shakes, all that
powder, all of it mixed. Like, that was terrible.
No, I disagree, man. If you give me,
Drake, everyone hated those.
No. Not everybody, because I skipped the UCAN.
Wow.
Sorry, Doyle. I didn't put the UCAN in mine. But I did put the red applesauce, and I put the cookies and cream powder, and I put a vanilla shake, and whatever else we had to put in there. I just skipped. The only thing I didn't put was the UCAN.
Like the cherry blossom thing?
I liked it, man.
Okay.
You like the bitter cherry blossoms, too?
It took a while to get used to them, but when they told me that like it was healthy and it gave you a bunch of vitamins and I didn't have to eat it and then I could go eat cake, I was like, okay, I'll drink one of these.
Wow. That reminds
me. The only protein shake that didn't make me, you know, shit my brains out was the Muscle Milks, the little like plastic.
Those were really good
ones. Are the only ones that didn't make me freaking lose.
So you're telling me that the little black cans, you didn't just take a dozen or two dozen of those back to the dorm?
Oh yeah, are great. Dude, they literally taste
those
like
those were unbelievable.
So good, but when I sat on the toilet later, that my ass wouldn't agree. But
that's tough. I feel like
that sounds like Bo.
Bo. Jeez, that's another story. I feel like everybody with all the stuff and all the nutrition that goes down at Iowa, all the different ways to kind of gain weight and the different avenues of doing that, especially nowadays with the, like, just the array of stuff they have at the nutrition station. Everybody kind of grows with, like, everyone has this affinity towards something. Like, for me in camp, and I know it's different for you guys because camp was like more traumatic and you have more of a trigger with it. But for me, when we would do the boosts with the snacks after practice in camp, I would crush up those chips, those baked Lay chips. I'd get the boosted Gatorade with the salt packet, and then I'd take a sip of the Gatorade and like dump a little bit of the crushed chips in my mouth. And I still, to this day, it's like one of the tastiest snacks I've ever eaten in my life.
All right, kids, yeah. give us one of your favorite and one of your least favorite parts of camp.
I mean, I would say the best part of camp was just like everything we just did in the locker room when we had our off time, like guys biting each other, wrestling, me and Coop roasting each other, going back and forth. Manders trying to wrestle me, you know, there's always some action going on. But the one thing that I hated was, you know, they did a decent job. What was it? The Marriott that we were at?
Yeah.
You about to say Marriott food? Dog, Marriott food was damn near the demise of me, bro. I lost so much weight in camp because of the Marriott food that Doyle was about to just throw me out of the program, I swear.
Yeah, I couldn't have those eggs every morning. They were like
The breakfast was rough. When we started getting catered meals, it was big time.
It was mixture of the depression and the repetitiveness of the food that sucked anyways. It was like a 3 or 4 out of 10 food to start, and then you have it for the 17th day in a row and it's now a 1, and you're also depressed as shit that you're in camp, and so now it's just not edible.
Yeah, you get that one hour of visiting hours at the end of the day, or not even
visiting hours. I like that. Damn, that's what we should have called our podcast.
We could change it, dude. There's always a 100th episode. Like, you know how people have a midlife crisis and they buy a fucking sports car or something?
We have a mid-pod crisis. We just
have a century mark crisis.
Mid-pod crisis. And the other thing that was so funny that we'd all would talk about was the camp goggles.
Yep.
Oh, the realist. Explain it to him, Kinzer.
The camp goggles. So, you know, when you're only around men for 21 days, the first time you get out and you see a female, you don't even care. It's not even like it's saying like, oh yeah, you go out and, you know, do, you know, whatever with anyone, but it's just the fact like you're around all guys. So when you finally, you're just back to being around girls, you would just like, it's like you're a freshman again. It was just so funny.
You
got
a
waistband.
You get back to the dorm. You see like a group of like three girls, and they might be like sixes. And you're like, dude, I just saw the hottest. I just saw the hottest freshman on campus, dude. I swear.
Dude, I'm a marry this one, bro. I swear. Week later, like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Did you love the dorms? Was the dorms an insane time for you? Because me and Kluver, we were roommates, and I would have done that shit for a second year if Kluver would have signed up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, me – so I was roommates with Quentin Alston. But one of my still really good friends now, he left our freshman year because he got in a little, like, accident. But Raymond Hammond, he was like two dorms away with Ryan Coca.
Oh,
and I would always go to their dorm and literally space stuff out, and we throw dorm parties in there all the time.
Oh man.
Like
his wife now is
it was just the best thing.
Damn.
And then did you guys ever play Manhunt when nobody was around except us athletes?
No.
Like during winter breaks and stuff. We played, there was like 30 of us that we got together and we played full Manhunt. Top floor to bottom floor, and it was so fun.
Like after the, like around the Big Ten championship time when like everyone leaves for Christmas break, and it's just you
and
guys
it's like
preparing
just
for the bowl.
Us, basketball, wrestlers, like it's only athletes,
Drake and I had a real good time. It was, we talked about it all the time, like, damn, we should have signed up for a second year, because once you get out of the dorms, then you can't go back, so it's like, damn it.
One of my favorite dorms
was amazing. This shit was so fun.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. One of my favorite memories of being in the dorm was it was like getting close to Halloween, so I just wanted to be weird and be stupid. So I had a scream mask.
Yeah.
And I was just standing in the halls or like turning a corner and like scaring people in Hillcrest, like joking around. And then all of a sudden I see a bunch of the guys. I saw like Damon, Jacob, Lomax, like whole Nico, like a whole group, and they're just walking down the hall. And like I'm just staring at the end, like far down, just staring at him, trying to be funny. And all I see is them whisper, and then all of a sudden they all start just sprinting at me. Oh, and like I remember I like juked one of them, and then I like spun around and I like closed the door, started sprinting, and one of them, I forgot who, but somebody was recording it. And all I heard was, damn, this dude should play football. Because I just took off on it. So the next day I came out, I was like, yo, y'all know that was me, right? They're like, bro, we're about to beat you up. <That's hilarious. laughs> It's a good thing I didn't get caught. But yeah, that was fun.
So here's a story for you, Kanziri. Down the hall, like three or four doors from me and Kluver, there was this kid who was an absolute psychopath.
Lunatic.
I don't remember what his name was, but he was like a raging alcoholic, and yeah. When he got pissed drunk, he just turned into a psycho, dude.
Yeah.
And one day he had a meltdown and he just like punched out his windows, mm-hmm. and he was just bleeding all over the third floor Hillcrest.
Yeah.
Like they had to bring up the paramedics and shit. It was insane.
He went into the girls' bathroom on that side of the dorm and started punching the mirror in the bathroom, and his knuckles were bloody, and he was walking like through the dorm. And Drake and I, we almost had to like citizens arrest him. It was that close.
Oh geez, yeah. I mean, a guy who's doing all of that, that's the person you got to worry about for, you know, doing some crazy stuff to the whole school. Like, remember we almost had that Batman guy come to Iowa? They like turned him down in admissions for his master's program, and then like a month later is when he did that at the theater. Like, those are the ones you got to freaking watch out for.
Are you talking about the shooting in Aurora?
Yeah, the Batman movie shooting. That guy
was supposed to come to Iowa?
He was trying to come to Iowa, and we denied him.
Jeepers,
yeah.
Dude.
Well, admissions.
And I went to the movies all the time. That's I went to Coral Ridge and Sycamore Mall for the movies all the time.
That's actually crazy.
So yeah. Was my favorite part of camp and traveling or night games or anything was the team movies. Like, it didn't matter if the movie was shit. It was the fact that like we all went in there during the opening previews was some of the most entertaining times that we ever had.
No one's better in the previews than Coop. No one.
There was it was Coop and Lomax going back and forth. That would be like, nah, that's Netflix. Like, this is a red box. And you would even have like the 30, not even 20 people that weren't with us that were just normal people there. Like they'd be laughing too. Yeah. Like they loved it.
They always got an extra show because we packed the theater with 120 extra guys, and Coop would just be up in the top row, previews rolling through, and somebody that would look remotely close to somebody else on the team would be in the preview, and he'd be like, "Hey Drake, what are you doing in that movie?" And people would just, and he would just be like, people would just die.
The other person who was funny to go to a movie with was Q Quinn. Like we went to go see, I can't remember the name. It was like this girl that got possessed. It was a friend. They were in the cabin in the woods. And Evil Dead. Evil Dead. And there's one part where this girl chops off her own hand or something because she was like nuts and possessed, and the guy's like using duct tape to like tourniquet it and everything. Dead silent. Q just goes, "Damn, that's hella duct tape." The whole theater was crying laughing for like 2-5 minutes after.
Now the movies were a great time, because as much as you grind through that camp time, and a lot of the times it happens in bull prep too, two times of the year where you're just like, we've talked about it before, you're just so close to your teammates and everybody is just a family, and it's awesome. So you get out of the dorms, and now it's 2012, because your freshman season was 2011, and it's 2012, and everyone's got a time in their career where they go through some adversity. And you may have others as well, but 2012, you go down with a knee injury and you had to redshirt. Talk about that year and how that, how that shaped you as your career went on in Iowa City.
Oh yeah. That year was a big one. It was, having the ACL. That was my first ever major injury. And, Amendola. Yeah. All I remember was like Amendola checks it. He looks at it. He's like, yep, it's torn. So you want to schedule for surgery this weekend? And I was like, oh, can I like call my mom and dad? Like, I don't even know what to do.
He was not in a very compassionate mood that day.
He's just so used to it. He's like, oh, so you want to do it?
I knew that Doc Amendola was a little bit of like a old school guy, but I didn't know that he was cold blooded.
It was just funny. I was like, I need some time. But yeah, going through that, especially when I was like named the starter, I was all excited for it. And then my girlfriend from back home, you know, the one I thought I was going to marry, all that stuff.
Oh, no.
And that year was when I went, I was partying too much, like drinking more. And it was just like, I was starting to become somebody else. But then when it came to like finally getting into rehab, my mom was a good motivator. I had other people really backing me, motivating me. And I like just took it as a challenge. You know, I was trying to get back to play in that season. And I mean, I remember saying it. I don't know if Russ will agree or not, but I remember them telling me that I was like one of their fastest ACL recoveries ever, because I was back and practicing at like 4.5 months.
Wow.
That's I was like in there all the time. I was like there 2-3 times a day. Or like even Coop, he'd be like, bro, you can fool everybody else, but you ain't fooling me. You never tore your ACL. You were downtown in Brothers the week after surgery. I was like, hey, it was my rehab. But no, it was definitely like a good time to like get things back on straight. Finally got back and healthy and everything. But Coach Ferentz decided to, you know, give me the medical redshirt, and it was a blessing in disguise. You know, sadly, us going 4-8, but gave me the opportunity to be in that 2015 season.
Yeah, which, so then.
Hey, guys. Yep, it's me again. Got to interrupt the episode real quick to talk to you guys about Spotify, one of the sponsors of this podcast. On Spotify, you can listen to all your favorite artists and podcasts in one place for free. You don't even need a premium account. Spotify has a huge catalog of podcasts on every topic, including the one you're listening to right now. Yeah, we're on Spotify. I don't know how we did that, but pretty cool. Other things you can do on Spotify is follow your favorite podcast so you never miss an episode. Premium users can download episodes to listen to offline, wherever you are, and you can easily share what you're listening to with your friends on Instagram. If you haven't done so already, be sure to download the Spotify app. Search for Washed Up Walk-Ons on Spotify or browse podcasts in the Your Library tab. Also, make sure to follow us so that you never miss an episode of the Washed Up Walk-Ons.
That 2013 season would be that next season that you were available to play. You get that red shirt.
Yeah.
At first, the red shirt's kind of, you know, it's a bummer. The whole situation's a bummer. But 4.5 months is a crazy recovery. And honestly, most of the guys at Iowa, for most regular people, to come back to play a sport like that, it would take 8 months, 6 to 8 months for sure. There's a lot.
My old man was an orthopedic surgeon, and he would have told you it was impossible. If you'd have said to him that you were going to come back in 4.5 months, he would have just been like, impossible.
Yeah.
Impossible.
Yeah. And I've heard a lot of the, like, you know, just the emphasis that the coaches and the staff put on the rehab, like get your treatment 2-3 times a day as much as you can. It really does get people back within like a crazy short amount of time. And it helps that, you know, you guys are elite D1 athletes, so the body heals a little differently, but all the resources were available. And it's awesome that you were able to come back that soon. So then 2013, that year that you came back, or your next season basically playing, was the year that your boys came in. And that's when Drake and I and Kevin got on campus. For those listening, by the way, Kevin's not here again. This is we're recording again. Drake didn't mention it. We've shit on him so much recently.
Oh, yeah. I was supposed to apologize for being insensitive because it actually wasn't his fault. You know, he's got a new niece. So I was just kidding. I didn't actually – he's not actually, like, on my shit list.
Yeah.
He has a plenty – perfect reason to not be.
Yeah, he would have been here for the two podcasts, 97 and 98, on this Sunday, but his brother had a baby. So So there's that.
Oh yeah, it's good for him though.
Anyway, 2013 rolls around, and now that's where we kind of pick up. Drake not quite in the running back room with you yet. Still trying to get those hips to play linebacker. And,
hey, bro.
I remember that.
I could have played downhill, bro. Just let me be.
All right.
Would you say though, if you could go back, like, are you just happy with the decision of going fullback, or would you still have loved to just be coming downhill and smacking people in linebacker?
Seeing how much my body progressed from the time I was 18 to 23, I would go back and I would try linebacker again, and I would just like take the knowledge of what my body needed. And
yeah.
I think I would be successful because I would focus on other things, you know, instead of just being like the absolute strongest I could be. Like, I would learn how to be flexible and other things like that. But
yeah, you're a great fullback, but you like the way you did your eye black and everything, like you would have been a freaking scary linebacker too. Like,
for sure.
Kanziri was the first dude when I moved over to the running back room. I was dog shit, right? And usually the guys who are good sit in the front of the room. For some reason, Kanziri took the absolute back left corner of the meeting room. And I was obviously in the back row because I was new and I sucked. And Kanziri was like, dude, you can definitely play fullback. He's like, if you can just learn how to get your pads down, you could probably play right now. And I was like, dude, I suck ass. And I sucked ass for a long time. But Kanziri was the first one who actually told me that I could do it.
No, and it was good that when I even first came in, Jason White, he was a good influence to me. Like, the first thing he said when we were in camp, he's like, I don't want to play over you just because I know the plays more than you. He's like, I want to play over you because I'm better than you. I want, you know, everything good for the team. So I'm going to tell you everything I know, teach you everything I know. So that was just how I kind of like passed it on. Every time a new running back came in, I was like trying to just do what I could, get him up to speed and everything. And I even remember Michael Malloy, like we joke about, like, he'd be like, dude, I just want to beat this. Like, I just want to fight you. Like, I hated you because you were just like competition, but I was just being nice. Like, oh yeah, I need to do this. But yeah, we're still good friends now. We still stay in touch too. But nothing was ever like, you know, rest in peace. But D Bull was one of the funniest freaking people,
bro,
ever in a freaking.
D Bull was a blessing to people who know him.
When you came in, that when we came in that 2013 year, the running back room looked like Weissman, D Bull, you, right? I think it was that was the depth chart.
Or Michael,
or kind of, and Barkley Hill was there as well.
Barkley,
Garmin,
wasn't he too?
Who's that?
Wasn't Garmin?
No, I didn't know.
No, he was gone right before we came in. Greg Garmin was, yeah.
But the Berkeley Grimm was in there.
Berkeley. So a bunch of guys that are some old timers as far as our time at Iowa goes, and there was that weird transition where Mark had like gone from fullback to running back because of injuries in that previous year, I believe.
That was before 2013.
Yeah, it was in 2012 because he was like the next up, and then he did really well. It was Weissman for Heisman, and like he just kind of ran with that. And 13 was his senior year, right? Yeah, with or was it 14? No,
14.
14, I think.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And he just kind of – he took the running back room after that. And then in 14 cans, that would have been your junior season, your fourth season. Was it you and Weissman splitting the reps there? Yeah?
It was like – well, yeah, like me and Weissman would switch a bunch, but D-Bull would also get carries too, but he was like the main third down back.
Yeah, and he would catch out of the backfield too. He was, I remember that play against Michigan State where he housed it out of the, like on a little flat.
Yep.
Yeah, that, I mean, that was, when I think of D-Bull, I think of that play and I think of him on Vine.
Yeah, his books, man.
Dude.
I'm trying to bring, I was just talking to some of my people that the social media company I work with, and we're talking about getting on TikTok, even though I hate TikTok, but you know, it's a wave right now. We're like about doing more skits. So I was like, oh, I got to hit up Low and be like, yo, bro, I'm about to recreate some of the ones and do like, then like just say like hashtag for you too. Like,
yeah. Scout
back, 'cause they had some funny ones. Come get your cookies.
Dude, that was, I'll never forget the when he put, I don't know what he put on his face, but whatever he did to make his face white, and they did the cop one. Yeah. Dude, that was that was the funniest one. And then
that was a big one that traveled.
And the woke up in a new Bugatti one, that one hit too.
Oh, and he was in his freaking little blue, I don't even remember what car that was, but that thing was holding on by a thread.
Oh man. Anyway, so 2014, and then what I really want to get to you with, Jordan, I mean, obviously post career as well, we want to talk about, but that last season, your senior year, you've got guys like Drew Ott and the best team of all time, Marshall Kane, Drew Ott, Austin Blythe, a bunch of other guys in that senior class with you. Talk about how that made you feel to be a part of, you know, the senior leadership group of that team, and how you guys kind of constructed us and the rest of the team that off season, and just capping your career with that season, like what that meant to you.
Mm-hmm. Well, the one thing that I told people, and it's nothing against like the guys who came before, because there were a lot of great guys, great leaders, great mentors. And when we lost in the Tax Slayer Bowl against Tennessee, like I remember I was so like hurt from it, because guys like Mark, Q, Loudermilk, Kirksey, and them, like they were guys who deserved it. Like those were guys who were freaking, they were leaders. They were a good team. They led us well. But the next year, just like our whole group, I just felt that it was the closest team that I was ever a part of at Iowa, that us older guys were cool with the freshmen. And like, we're like, we wouldn't just be like, oh, you're a freshman, you can go grab me a roller. Like we're all cool. Like, but that was the thing that I just felt like we were really close and everything. And, that was nice to be able to like finally be kind of a part of that leadership role. But yeah, just going into it, you kind of just, I feel like we all just felt that it was something going to happen.
Yep.
And you know how it was, just after every single game, we're just like, wait, is this really happening?
Yep.
Like
that shit was so surreal, man.
I'm telling you, Kevin and I would wake up, we'd turn on the BTN like recap, whatever they call that post game show on Sunday mornings before we head in for the shakeout run. And they'd run through, and it's like, the Hawks win again. They're 5-0. They're 6-0. They're 7-0. And Kevin and I would just look at each other like, dude, what's going on? Like, what?
Yeah.
It was just kind of that thing. And we've talked about that, the closeness of that team. It's hard to describe, and you just don't know unless you were a part of it. But you described it well. It was more of that. And it was our middle year, so it was weird because we didn't realize it at the time. We just felt like, oh, we're finally in the middle where we've got two classes beneath us, so we kind of know everybody beneath us. But we're also – there's only two classes above us, so we're kind of connected with them. But I guess talking to other people through this podcast, everybody just felt so connected. Like when we were freshmen, I was like – there was no way I would ever sit down on the couch in the lounge with like – Sheriff and Ray Hamilton and Van Sloten and just hang out and talk. Like it just wasn't, I just wasn't friends with them. And like, we weren't that close, but that year, man, like Ott and everybody just made it a huge deal to just everyone be close and everyone is even. And I don't know, man, it was special.
No, it was definitely good. And we felt it all from even using that Slight Edge book and all that stuff. Everything was just coming into play. So to see it all just pan out and fall the way it did was definitely cool. But I mean, just for me personally, it was obviously awesome to just be a part of that. But for me, I was always, you know, focusing on the things I was still doing wrong. Like when we beat Wisconsin, everybody was going nuts and screaming and celebrating and carrying the trophy. I'm sitting on my chair bummed out because I fumbled when Cole Crossman had to recover it.
Yeah.
And like towards the end. And everyone's just like, dude, why aren't you like happy? I'm like, oh, I am. I mean, but you know, I was just like trying to do better for the team, but it was still a good thing we won. And then having both of those ankle injuries, that definitely sucked. Just like, you know, having to watch on the sideline. But Ack, he did a freaking great job. Derek, he did an awesome job. LaShawn, like, we had a roster.
It was wild. It was wild. We were so deep, and it wasn't, it was like almost not even because of talent, but just because of that next man in, like, I have no choice but to step up and play, you know?
Yeah.
Man, that game where you got hurt and then Ack took over at Northwestern and had his game with four touchdowns and about a million yards, that was one of those games. That was kind of like the Ohio State game, Drake, in 17. Again, it was one of those games where it's like, so this team absolutely can't beat us. Like, that's just what it is. Like,
and that was way bigger than us beating what, 20 Northwestern. You guys beat 6 Ohio State.
Yeah, it was.
And it wasn't like that. I was just rewatching that the other day. Drake, was that your first touchdown?
Yeah.
That had to be dope.
It was insane.
He pulled the.
Yep.
Because there's a lot of my friends who are big Dragon Ball Z fans, and they always say, like, power level over 9,000, you know, whatever. Like, they're just, you know, yeah, exactly. So I had to give it – that was to the old Muscatine friends.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and that was when I was in Japan, and a lot of our coaches, like, since they came to – I even remember like in our meeting room, we had the Japanese players come in and like watch us.
That was always a little bit bizarre.
Yeah. I was like, wait, who are these dudes? And then I'm year later, I'm playing with them. Like, it was just so funny, but yeah, they loved Iowa. They loved everything about us, the coaches. So every time we had a good game, they'd be like, oh, Iowa. Da, da, da. But yeah, that one, I remember they were like, whoa, like, I didn't think they would win. And I'm like, yeah. We're like that.
You know? What was that like watching it from a fan's perspective? Because, like, I am now way more anxious as a fan than I ever was as a player. So, like, what was that feeling like when you were just like, is this really happening?
I would say, it was kind of like I would say it was almost like surreal. Just the fact that, like, when you're in it, obviously you're just focused. You're not really like thinking about anything else other than playing the game. But then when you're sitting there watching it, guys that you know, guys that you've, you know, freaking spent 5 years with, you know, a lot 4 years with, 3 years with, and seeing them progress and seeing you guys just ball out, like, it's just cool to see that. But it was, to be just screaming at the TV and everything. And out in Japan, I had to watch the games at like 4 in the morning, 3, like 5 in the morning, stuff like that. So, you know, I try to stay loyal, but yeah, it was good. Me and Drake would always watch him and stuff, but it was just cool to see you guys ball out.
I feel like watching as a fan, just in general, like any game, especially those games where they're like things are clicking, you can almost connect on a deeper level, and you just kind of sit there and you sit back and you're like, they're hitting right now. Like, you know, like, I know this feeling. Like, I can see it. I can see the way these guys are running onto the field and running off the field. And I can see them in the huddle, and I can see it in their eyes. And I know that feeling. And like, whoever you're watching with, just the people who haven't been there, you just kind of look over and you're like, they're hitting right now. It's all cylinders go. Yeah. Like, there's no stopping these guys. That's kind of how it's been. Like, last season was like that, you know, with the 10 and 3 season. It's fun to watch.
I went down to the San Diego Bowl, the Holiday Bowl, and watched them. And I had two of my buddies, one from here, one who was a Marine stationed out down there. And they were like, yo, this is crazy. And I'm like, yeah, this is actually my last year of guys that I played with. So that was kind of cool too. Feeling so old, but then at the same time, like, it was almost just like a nice little humbling feel that these guys that literally saw coming in as freshmen, young, small, and now they're old and mature, and I'm still short, but, you know, everyone else.
For real.
But, yeah, no, it's just cool to be able to see all that happen.
You mentioned you played in Japan, and we'll get to there, but I want to rewind back to you finish your senior season. We go out to L.A., and Christian McCaffrey puts us on a highlight tape, and we come back after that break and you start training for the NFL draft. And I want to hear about that process and kind of how you found your way through there. NFL didn't work out. And then all of a sudden you're in Japan. And then at one point you're actually affiliated with the AFL team out in Albany, and kind of all of that, your post Iowa career, but still football stuff. Talk about that.
Yeah. No, yeah, it was tough. It was a lot of trial, but, you know, I'm happy with how things have gone because, you know, it makes me who I am today. And The one thing when I was leaving Iowa, training for pro day, it was cool because I had Tim Dwight. He was training me for, you know, my first sprint training, and then still working out with all the guys. And that was a cool thing too, was since I finished my degree, my second degree, I was able to just, you know, work out and chill. So me and Andrew Stone would literally work out and then go back to my place and play Left 4 Dead and just eat and chill.
Our semester 2 years later was when Fortnite got big. And so Kevin and I had no classes. We would wake up, train at 9:30, come back, mm-hmm. play Fortnite from noon until 9 o'clock at night. It was fantastic.
That is true. That is when it came out. But
is that the best time in your life, Kluver? Have you already said it was?
Yeah, I mean, dude, 100%. I got a free ride, no judgment of like, oh yeah, it's like a pass. You're training for the NFL. That's what you tell people you're doing. And in my case, in reality, it was just like, I'm basically getting a free semester of just hanging out. You know, I can't think of the word.
Learning some life lessons.
I'm exhausting this opportunity, but I know it's not going to work out, but I get a free pass for these 3-4 months.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, it was so fun.
But for you, Jordan, you were a great running back in the Big Ten. You had a definite shot at the league. So,
yeah, it sucked because, I mean, I knew it going in that I might not get drafted due to my injuries. Like, I had ankle surgery, knee surgery, and then senior year having 2 high ankle sprains. You know, when you go buy a Lamborghini, you want a brand new one or you want one you've worked on. So I already knew that going in. And then I pulled my hamstring. It was like the week before we had the pro day.
Oh, same.
So I was just stressed. Yeah. So you know how it is. It was just super stressed, super bummed, but, you know, still tried to do what I could and had it all wrapped up, had a sleeve on it. And I ran my first 40. And I mean, I did good. I think I had like a 4.43 or something, but 4.41, 4.43, something like that. And it freaking was killing me. I went over to Ray. I was like, yo, Ray, I don't know if I can do this anymore. And he's like, you sure? I have to go around and tell all the scouts. And when he said that, I was like, nah, I can't. So I just like pushed through, finished through. And even though it was killing me, still had good numbers, still performed well enough that I thought it would still, you know, help me going through. And I had a bunch of teams calling me. The day of the draft, I had the Browns saying that they were going to pick me up for sure. Kansas City and even like, I think it was the Cardinals too. I can't remember, but like I thought, like I was like, okay, I won't go, you know, 1st through 5. I might go 6th and 7th. And if I don't do that, I'll definitely get signed. And my parents, you know, I love them, but I told them, I said, I don't want a draft party. Just want to hang out with some friends at this, it's called Recovery Room. It's like a Buffalo Wild Wings. And what do you know? Walk in, my highlight film's playing on the TV.
Oh, no.
Got pictures of me. The news showed up, and I'm like, oh, geez. So, you know, draft rolls through. Don't get picked. Don't even get a call to get, like, signed right after. So I'm super embarrassed. But I'm like, you know, no, I'm cool. And went back to my hotel room. I booked it just to, like, get away from everybody. My agent calls me, says, like, I got tryouts with, or rookie mini camps with the Browns and the Chiefs. So went to the Chiefs, first day did great. I even remember the running back coach was like complimenting me on like one move I made on somebody. Like I was excited. I thought I was doing good. And second day I broke my hand, but I didn't want to tell anybody. Like I went to catch a screen. Somebody pushed the guy into me, just hit my hand the wrong way. And my hand, it literally felt like a knife was going through my hand.
Damn.
But, just pushed through, finished through. Then the next weekend, they told me I was number one on the injury reserve list, so at least I felt like I did something. Then I went to Cleveland. It was just me and one other running back, same situation, full roster, but they just need a running back for, like, number one injury reserve. So same thing, balled out. Still didn't tell them I had a broken hand. Still felt like every time I caught a ball, ran with it, someone was stabbing me in the hand, but just pushed through. Then after that, after they also said I was number one on the reserve list, went, got my surgery, was working at good old Bardo, that week the Rams called me and were like, hey, we just cut a guy. We're trying to sign somebody. Now we're bringing in you and two other running backs for a tryout. And whoever makes it will just stay here. And I was like, all right, bet. Cut the cast off at the bar, flew out there. They didn't know. So they're like, wait, your hand's broken? I was like, yeah, it was a while ago. Don't worry about it. They cut the stitches off, let me perform. And I, again, thought I did good, thought I was better than the other two running backs. But my agent called me and was like, hey, they said they loved you, but they need somebody they can take now, and the team doctor won't clear you for a couple months.
Fuck.
Like, damn. So that's when I did have offers from the CFL, but I heard so much of like that 2-year contract bind. So I was just like, I don't know if I want to do that. So I went to Japan because I was like, yo, Drake's already going out there. It'd be fun. And that contract, like if I get a call, I can leave.
Yeah.
They can't hold me there. Like I could literally leave, come back and play. And, but second game in Japan tore my other ACL.
Jesus.
So I was like, oh geez. So that's when I just came back to Iowa City, worked at Bardo Rehab, just chilled and stuff. And, once I got right, I just went back out to Japan for the full year just to, you know, get the body back and right and everything. And then when I came back to the States, that's when you mentioned I was doing a trial with the AFL team. And it was cool. It was a fun experience. But freaking a week before, I don't know why, I just keep doing things. But week before that combine, I tore a muscle in my lower back doing speed deadlifts. And still did well, but, you know, I had those little heat packs that, you know, Russ would always give us. Yep. And all those things. And yep. Tried to do what I could, but it was killing me. And I was doing well, but, you know, I was going from running back to a receiver and then a whole different game. So when they let me go, they're like, hey, well, these guys that we have here, they have AFL experience, they have indoor experience. We want you to play on this team as like a division lower. We're really good friends with the coach. And then during the season, we could bring you up. And I was just like, I don't know if I want to do that. Cause then I had a tryout with the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. So I went down there and was freaking balling out. And it was actually cool. Cause everything I learned in the AFL with, you know, how those guys get the running start.
Yeah.
And big on routes with the AFL is a smaller field. So I had to learn so much more about leverage. So when I was not doing the tryouts running against linebackers, I was freaking killing them. And even the running back coach was like, oh, like, where'd you learn this from? And I was like, oh, I was on an AFL team, da da da. Then towards the end, I did a wheel route, just blew past the linebacker, but the quarterback underthrew it. So I had to like kind of gear down and stop. And the guy kind of like ran into me and I like just straight leg pulled my other hamstring. Dude. I felt it pop like 3 times. I was just like, oh my gosh, like, I don't think I'm meant to play football anymore. But yeah, like I said, it was still good to be able to then just come back home, was settled. I started doing student teaching and right now I'm still doing it. And then I'm working with a guy at a gym and training kids up there too. And amongst other things as well. So, you know, I'm definitely happy where I'm at now, but yeah, it was definitely a long period of struggles and trials of just injuries.
That was
football just isn't fair.
No.
the game doesn't care who it's just destroying. It just doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, oh yeah, this guy working really hard, getting through it. Nah, we're
you know, let me break his leg real quick.
Dude, like that's an absolute wild ride of injuries and then coming back and somewhere else injury back. I feel for you. Cause like, I'm sure you felt like you had such a good chance to like excel in all of those areas. And then the injuries just were taking you back. But for your body's sake, I'm happy that like you're done now, honestly, after hearing all that.
Well, about that. So I may or may not have made a dumb decision last year. I was bored and, you know, just couldn't stay away from football. I joined a semi-pro team and I was playing strong safety and corner.
Oh my God.
And because I told them, I was like, hey, like, I don't want to play running back. I see how it is. I see how guys are dirty. And I'm not getting paid like that, so I don't want to, you know, be running the ball like crazy, risk another injury. And they're like, oh, that's totally fine. You could just play defense, da, da, da. And I was loving it. I was loving playing safety. I was coming down, hitting and everything. In my first game, I had 3 interceptions. Like, it was fun.
Holy shit.
But But I, our second or third game, we were playing this team and it was real close. And they had this really fast gunner. So every time they punted it, we had no chance to return it. So I was like, coach, put me on that guy. He's like, you sure? I was like, yeah, put me on that guy. I'll hold him. And went out there, held him up, blocked him good. But it was like a really short punt and it came back and literally bounced right in front of me. So what do you think? Running back instincts, picked it up, ran around the edge and jumped over a guy. But I landed with my arm like this. So I dislocated my shoulder. And that was the first time I've ever done that. So went to the EMT that was there. She just left because we broke another guy's leg from the other team.
Oh my God.
So I had to drive in the car with our coach's wife to the hospital. It was like 20 minutes away. I'm just holding my arm like this because I couldn't even move it. And I get to the hospital, and at this point, you know, I'm 26, didn't have health insurance. So I literally tell them, I'm like, hey, I don't have health insurance. I don't give me any painkillers. Don't give me any muscle relaxers. Just pop it back in. And they're like, are you sure? I was like, yes. So like six nurses were in there, like four of them were there just to watch.
Dude.
Two of them were like laid me down. I was biting on my wallet.
Dude.
And they finally just like popped it back in place. And they were like, I've never seen that before. And I was like, hey, well, you know, you got to do what you got to do when you don't have insurance. But, you know, the criminal.
Bro, you were playing semi-pro without health insurance? If yeah. I could come through the screen right now and stuff you in another trash can, I would do it in a heartbeat.
Yeah, it was not.
Idiot.
But I just couldn't help it. But, yeah, it wasn't smart for sure. So popped it back in. That was fine. Little do I stop? No. Kept playing. Dislocated it like two more times, but I popped it back in myself. But that's why I was saying it's funny about the injuries. Now I have to get surgery on my shoulder because it was like 2 or 3 months ago. Bro, I'm laying on my bed. The freaking sun, you know, just hits me right on the face. You know, I'm feeling good. Got a great night's rest. And I'm just like, pop.
Oh my. Just
from yawning.
Jesus,
my shoulder popped
dude.
Out.
You're done. You're done.
Yeah. They were like, when I talked to the doctor after I put it back in and everything, they're like, yeah, it shouldn't pop out like that easy. So you probably need surgery. So I was like, yeah. So, yeah.
That's.
I have a nice little resume of injuries.
Absolutely wild. So now that brings you here. And you mentioned that you're training some people. I know that before we hit record, we talked about how you are on a podcast of your own that you're doing out there. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So, I would say it's like three things that I'm doing right now. I'm all subject tutor at an alternative learning program school. So like, kids kicked out of their original schools, lower income neighborhoods, behavioral issues, traumas, all those things, like tough kids. But, I love it. I work with the 9th and 10th graders. I travel around to each classroom. So like, you know, when you think of most tutors, it's like they're assigned to one teacher, math teacher, science teacher. Like I have to learn every subject. So it was tough, but now it kind of feels cool because I feel like I actually remember school now.
That's funny.
But then, this guy that I'm friends with who owns a gym, I run the strength and conditioning program up there. So right now we're just back to the basics of doing like a focusing just on like the mechanics, speed,
yep.
Doing only some lifting, not because I'm working with like some kids that are 9 years old and I'm working with some college athletes one-on-one and stuff, but no, that's been fun. But then, yeah, I work with this company called two Buttons Deep. Most of the time when I say it, since I mumble, people are like, two buns, like buns, butt cheeks. I'm like, no, two buttons deep. But, with them, it's just like, if I would basically say it's almost like a class or bar stool. Like we showcase things that are happening in the area, getting people to see like what great things go on and like why it's cool to live up in upstate New York. And we go to different events. We get sponsored. Like I was telling you earlier,
yep.
we get one of our biggest sponsors is this distribution distillery company or something. And each month we get sponsored by a new beer. So when we're doing our podcast, we have to be drinking the beer. Like this month was Guinness. I told him, Drake, next month we have Corona. So that's going to be fun.
That's a great plug, man.
Right. But yeah.
Making these people go fucking batshit.
Yeah. So it'll be fun to talk about it then. And so, yeah, it's just been cool to also have that platform where I can just kind of just let go and have fun again. Cause you know how we are. We're used to when you're in front of the camera, you got to act a certain way.
Right.
Present yourself a certain way.
Yeah.
And so when I was like starting all that back up, I still kind of had that on me. So even like my guys that I work with, like they would tell me, they'd be like, hey, like we know you're funny, we know you're cool, but sometimes it sounds like you're trying to sell stuff because I just be like so formal.
Yeah.
And so it's been good to kind of like be back and just be funny again, like how it was when, you know, me, Damon, and Lomax were doing all the vines and stuff.
For sure.
So doing some of that more stuff now. So it's been fun. Yeah, it's been a good time.
That's awesome. We're happy to hear you're doing well. Drake, you have anything else for Jordan before we let him go?
No, man. It was a great time catching up with him. Man, sounds like he's a man of many endeavors. So get a little sleep while you can and
keep that. Those shoulders healthy, dude.
Yeah,
Christ. Oh, I'm
don't
try.
Hurt yourself anymore, dude.
Stay away from the noon league basketball.
That. Oh, I don't know about that.
All right. Well, Jordan, thank you for coming on. Obviously, episode 98 of the Wash Up Walk-Ons. That is it. Jordan, you're welcome back anytime. We would love to have you. And
hey,
that's another one in the books.
Great time.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
Great time. Great talking to y'all. So anytime.
Absolutely. We're two away from 100 people. And for those listening, we are not sure. All three of the walk-ons are going to be gone 2 or 3 days from now on the 15th of March. And so we're not going to have any episodes recorded on that day. So next week, potentially, and I'll put it out on Twitter, Instagram, everything, there may not be any episodes. There might be one episode if Drake and I can get something recorded during the week, this week, but, there may be a week of laps here for the walk-ons. So, if there is, after we come back, we're going to be at 99 and then 100. The 100th episode is officially set. And we're pretty goddamn excited about that. We've got a special guest coming on for that one. And we are excited to keep creating content for Hawkeye Nation. And that's what we do. Heart Don't Have Stars. T-shirt coming soon. Hawks by a million. Jordan, anything? Any last words?
Oh, no. You said it all, man. Go Hawks, baby.
Let's go. Walk-ons out. Peace.
I'm MJ Acosta Ruiz.
And I'm Lindsay Zarniak.
And together we'll be hosting the On Her Turf podcast. This summer, On Her Turf is hosting a daily Olympics podcast that focuses exclusively on women's sports and the amazing women competing in Tokyo. We'll bring you interviews with Olympians and in-depth analysis on your favorite teams.
Plus, we're going to talk about some of the challenges still facing women's sports today.
So join us daily at On Her Turf as we cover all the excitement of the Tokyo Olympics.
Be sure to check us out on Apple Podcasts and be sure to follow On Her Turf on Twitter and Instagram too.